Hello, this is Mo Abley, and you are listening to Live at 5, a special edition here on WVBI. And I have a special guest today named Robert Neff. Welcome, Robert.
Nice to be with you, Mo.
Oh, thank you. Well, let's start out with where you're from and where you live on the island.
Well, this is my 35th summer on Beaver Island, which makes me a stranger. And for 31 of those years, I've owned a house that's on Indian Point Road, facing out toward Garden Island, hanging over a cliff. You couldn't build it today, but the cliff moved and the house was built close when one could do that. So Beaver Island is a part of my year every year.
That's wonderful. What a lovely place to live.
The other part of your question, where I'm from, currently my domicile is in Pinehurst, North Carolina, which is way down in what's called the Sand Hills section, the southern end of the state of North Carolina. And it's the golf capital of the United States, which will mean something to some people and not to others.
Mm-hmm. Well, my nephew lives near there, so I've never visited him, though, so I need to get over there one of these days.
Well, it's a very interesting village that was built in the style of the Cotswolds in England, and it retains its sort of historic nature. It's fun to live there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet. You are an historian. You love history. I can tell that because you know the heritage of your town and what it looks like, and the book that we're going to talk about today, which will be released very shortly, is an historical novel.
That's all correct. I can't argue with any part of that, Mo.
Yeah. What aspects of history really interest you?
Well, in terms of this book, it's a part of history that I think has been written about more than any other thing in human history. That period of time during the 1930s and the early 1940s when Europe was in turmoil and got itself into so much trouble is just the subject of all sorts of recorded history, and so I thought it needed some more. And tried to go away from the factual and into the fanciful a little bit, to imagine what might have happened to ordinary people during those times. We know about all the heroes, but we don't really know what happened with the ordinary people, except they kept being born, falling in love, getting sick, building careers, etc.
Right.
And I thought it was important to look into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So your take on World War II is a little different than, true historians, because you bring imagination and intrigue and love and romance into that story. The subtitle. Well, let's talk about the title first.
All right.
Before we get into, I'm intrigued by the book. I can't wait to finish it. The title is, and you say it for me because you'll say it properly.
The Germans call it Über alles. Most people would call it Über alles because it's a U that can be pronounced differently with the umlaut that the Germans put over it. We don't have an umlaut in our language, so we don't have that sound. So let's call it Über alles.
Okay. And the subtitle is A Novel of Love, Loyalty, and Political Intrigue in World War II. And my little taste of the very first few chapters of it says, yep, it definitely is that.
Well, when my publisher began to talk to me about it, he said, how do you view it? And I said, it's either a history lesson wrapped in a love story or the reverse of that. And I still haven't solved that for myself. But,
well, you don't have to. I mean, every reader will do that, you know, in their own special way. So what does the title mean?
The title means, Über means above, alles, everything else. Hmm. And it was a part of the German national anthem during the early years of the Nazis, the National Socialists. And their anthem was called Deutschland über alles, the fatherland above all other things. And that was where their loyalty was supposed to be. But my attempt was to find out where the loyalties of individual people might have been during that time. Some were to other people, some were certainly to the fatherland, some were to music. Each person had something that meant more to him than anyone else. And I sort of leave that out there as a lady in a tiger situation for my reader to come up with his or her conclusion as to what really is above all else mm-hmm. for these characters.
Mm-hmm. There's a ton of research, I am sure, involved in doing a book like this. How do you go about doing that?
Well, it's a lot easier now than when I was going to law school, when you used to carry a stack of books in a corner of the library and thumb through them page by page to find references. As you know, there are any number of electronic helpers that can lead you to a different point in history and help you to find three or four articles on it, which you can read easily on a screen, and you can pick from those things. So, yes, there was a lot of research involved, and some of it was very interesting to me in that I thought that I knew something, and the more I researched it, the more I found that lots of people didn't know anything about it or knew different things from some other authorities' point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets rather difficult because you do try and be as accurate as possible, but when there are three things presented to you as being totally accurate and they're all different, you have to either fudge the way you use the information or you have to choose from it. I don't know if I gave you this example the other day, but as you are beginning to see as you read the book, there's a lot of reference to music within it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I tried to tell my readers was about a very interesting German concentration camp that existed outside Austria, Poland, and Germany, where they were well protected. And it existed in what had been Czechoslovakia, outside Prague. It was an old fortress that had been built by the Emperor Joseph II. And at some point, it was decided by the Nazis that they were going to imprison people there. But since it was going to be visible, that is, outside the controlled areas of Europe, they might as well try and make it as pleasant as possible for a visitor to go there. Now, it wasn't pleasant. Thousands of people died there. But it was also a musical center, and all of the musicians that were lifted off the streets, the Jewish musicians, the gypsy musicians, the homosexual musicians, all ended up in Theresienstadt, and they performed there. And I did all sorts of research on that, but to check out my own conclusions, I asked a friend of mine who was the leader of a fine international orchestra called the Discovery Orchestra to check things out. And it turned out that he had worked in Prague and worked with some of the survivors of that camp.
Oh, my.
And I had my my protagonist male, who was imprisoned there, seeing a Steinway piano on a stage and deciding he was going to play that and tune it. And my friend George Mariner Mall, the maestro, said, no, that was a Jacobi piano. And it had one leg missing, and the man who smuggled it in was named. And so I had to go back and rewrite the whole thing. and I could not have found that out in any reference book.
True.
So,
true.
You do research, and that's what you were asking me about. You do it in books. You do it with people. And sometimes you go there and kick the tires yourself.
So how long did it take you to do this book, to write it?
The inspiration for it, if you will, was a bet that was made about 7 years ago with a friend of mine that that I couldn't combine two different things into a book, and I wrote two or three chapters and put it aside. And then about 4 years ago, when I was where we spend our summers in Central America, and where the phone doesn't ring and nobody knows me,
That's helpful.
I pulled it out and started writing again. And Beaver Island also lends itself to that. Mm-hmm. You can be as private on Beaver Island as you care to be.
Yes.
So Beaver Island and San Juan del Sur, Nicaragua, are the two places that I've written about Germany. Maybe that isn't good research.
I don't know. So, is this the first historical novel that you've attempted to write?
It is. It is. I've written all my life because all the jobs I've ever had have involved writing in one way or another. But I always kind of thought that my bucket list would start with writing something that was written over my name. It wasn't written for the president of a company or for some other purpose, and that it would be historical, because history, as you've observed, is something I'm interested in, and that it would be a novel because it gives you a little more latitude.
Mm-hmm. So, the you can bring your imagination to it. So your background is in writing. You said you went to law school, so...
Well, I went to law school after I'd gone to engineering school, so I don't know. I think I probably was fortunate in having access to a lot of different talents. And during World War II, when I was an impressionable young guy, both my parents were very much involved in the war. I had no brothers and sisters, but I had a couple of old maid aunt school teachers, one who taught history and one who taught English. And they massaged that part of my character to the nth degree. They always made sure I knew how to write, how to punctuate, and that I was aware of history, the history that I was living in, all the history that they knew about. So.
Mm-hmm. Some doting aunts, then.
Doting aunts deserve a lot of credit for what I've written.
Yeah. Oh, well, how wonderful is that? How wonderful.
Couldn't change it for anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've written throughout your whole career in
Correct.
Various kinds of for various yeah. kinds of jobs and
I have said that I think the ultimate fiction that I've been involved in writing was the confidential memoranda to investors in private placements of securities, because you were bound by what the SEC and NASDAQ and all of the other agencies that oversee the kind of prospectus that you must put out.
Right.
And yet you have to make it as attractive as possible. You have to somehow suggest that this is going to be the next Apple or the next. I wrote a lot of those in the 1980s when that was a popular thing to do, and mm-hmm. when our tax laws help people to invest in that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. A lot of technical details in those things, too, that you have to make understandable average person.
Exactly, Mo. You've captured it.
Yeah. I do some writing, too. I do marketing writing. So
all right.
Writing for corporations for many years to help them help people understand the products that they have to sell, typically, and sometimes to help consumers understand a product that they might want to buy. So,
how do you get the dogs to eat the dog food?
I've never thought of it that way, but that's about it, you know. And it's good, you know. I love writing. It's mm-hmm. always been a part of my life, as it has been yours.
Yeah. Well, as I approach this, which is a little different kind of writing from what I had done previously, I had the model of Dan Brown. And I think when he wrote The Da Vinci Code, he had a story, but he also had some things he wanted to impart to readers if they didn't like the story. And I wasn't totally convinced of the story, but I was so happy to learn so many incidental facts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are a lot of those packed into Uberalles, and I'm happy for people to find them and come away and say, I never knew that. That never occurred to me. So I have covered a half dozen things that I don't think people knew about, starting with Theresienstadt, which I talked about a moment ago. I don't think most people know that there was a performing arts concentration camp. And I checked the other day, and 170,000 people went through the gates on the way in. 17,500 came out at the end.
Oh, my.
The ones in between generally got sick and went off to Auschwitz, and that was in Poland, so nobody knew what happened there, but now we do.
Oh, man. Well, I was unaware of that town and that very special.
You may still visit it. If you go to Prague, it's about 20 minutes northeast of Prague. And as I said, it was a castle that was built, or a fortress that was built by Joseph II, named after his mother, Maria Theresa. It was the place where the man who shot the Archduke Franz Ferdinand and started World War I was imprisoned all by himself until he died.
Oh, my.
His name was Principe, and he lived there all alone.
Wow. Wow. So lots of history over there.
Yeah. Indeed.
Are you fascinated most in world history? Or I'm asking because my husband, he loved history, too. But he was all about American history, not the world.
Well, I've lived in America most of my life, but I've traveled most of the world, too. So I suppose there are some parts of world history that I don't know anything about. But most of the work that I did for a living was focused outside the United States. So I probably know a little more world history and geography than the average guy does.
Mm-hmm. And clearly have retained it and enjoy it and has brought you hours of pleasure and a book.
Well, I hope the book can bring some hours of pleasure.
Yes.
That would be my ultimate reward.
So when is it scheduled to be published? I know we're reading advanced copies now.
Yeah,
so.
You're reading advanced copies, which is something a publisher does to iron out mistakes and improve the flow of a book. Mm-hmm. Those have been distributed to people, and the people have come back with commentary, and the commentary has been weighed and put into a final copy, which was probably approved last night, and I'm told the first shipments of the book will be about the 15th of September.
Okay. And will it be available through Amazon?
Any place you would normally buy a book will be able to get this book for you.
Oh, wonderful.
They may not have it in the window, but they will, you know, they get those things on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and all those overnight now.
Anytime that you want to get a book, you can go to any bookstore and say, here's the book I'm looking for.
Yes,
and
yes.
They will order it for you.
Correct.
As long as it's in current publication. So, again, the title is Über Alles.
You got an A in German, yes.
I'm not very good at that. And written by Robert Neff.
Correct.
Who has been a Beaver Islander for
35 years.
35 years in the summer. How wonderful. What brought you to Beaver Island in the first place?
My wife had a friend who was part of the Lafreniere family up here, a man named Francis Pike, who I'm sure a lot of your listeners know.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I went to my wife's farm, which is in the downstate area of Michigan, Francis would get invited and he would pinion me to the wall and say, when are you coming to Beaver Island? And I said to my wife, Julie, how do I sage this guy? And she said, go to Beaver Island. So 1981, we came to Beaver Island and rented a little place to stay in. And my wife apologized for the fact that it was small and not elegant. I said, I like this. I grew up in this.
Yeah.
And couldn't wait to come back again.
Oh, how wonderful. Well, we are thrilled that you did come back.
Well, thank you.
And that you're part of our, you're now part of the island lore, you know.
Well, I would like to become such. When everybody on Beaver Island owns four copies of Über Alles, I will feel I've arrived.
Well, I truly am looking forward to reading the rest of your book. I wish I had been able to read the whole thing before we had a chance to talk. But
thank you, Mo.
I'm going to do that, and I would recommend that everybody here on the island do that as well. I assume that you're going to talk to the library about them getting their own copy.
I will be glad to give them a copy or more than one copy. I think that library is a wonderful place.
Oh, it is. It is. It's terrific. It's the neatest little library I've ever been in. So, okay. Well, thank you for joining us today, Robert, and we'll look forward to that publication coming up soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay.
Bye.
You have been listening to WVBI, and this is Mo Abley. It's been live at 5, and now we're back to our music. Thanks.